property or encampment. It's something where you're seeing a very concerted effort to surveil, harass, and target Indigenous-led movement.
Before I ask you a slightly different question about what has happened throughout Canada, yesterday being the Canada Day for protests, let me ask you about these sex trafficking charges. What do you know about them? Two men working on the Enbridge Line 3 charged with sex trafficking.
I know that it's the second sex trafficking ring that's been busted that's had Enbridge employees in it in the months that they've been here in our territory. I know that we told and warned the state. We warned the governor and Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan that this would happen, and it did. A 30-minute training or even a day training to employees is just not enough. These people are here in our state. They're mostly from out of state. There's 5,000 mostly out-of-state workers here constructing Lane 3. They are growing increasingly aggressive. Actually, yesterday at the demonstration, one of the workers attempted to drive a vehicle running over protesters on site. These people are here to destroy the territory. They are not interested in developing relationships or being accountable to our communities, because they're not.
Finally, the protests all over Canada Thursday on Canada Day following the recent discovery of graves and remains of First Nations children at government-run schools. Tara, you are Ojibwe from the Kochiching First Nation. Can you talk about this?
Connect with your favorite community radio station on social media.
Our Facebook page is facebook.com/kboomradio.
And follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/kboo.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/kboo radio.
We also provide content to the free music archive.
An interactive library of high-quality legal audio downloads.
That's at freemusicarchive.org/curator/KBOO.
You can find all of this and more on the KBOO website, kboo.fm.
Thanks for listening.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News. Homeland Security warns of far-right violence in Oregon. Towns in the Cascades rebuild after 2020's wildfires. And the U.S. Supreme Court upholds voter suppression laws. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, July 2nd, 2021. I'm Yasmin Kobanoglu. Since the January attack on the Capitol, federal law enforcement has sounded alarms about the far-right terrorist groups with links to the U.S. military. Now Homeland Security is warning that Oregon could be the site of far-right demonstrations this weekend. With more on the story, it's Eric Tegedoff with the Public News Service.
Far-right groups could be active over the Independence Day weekend. That's prompted the Department of Homeland Security to release a bulletin warning of the possibility of extremist violence, according to a document obtained by ABC News. Stephen Piggott with the Portland-based Western States Center says some arrests have been made of leaders of groups active in the Northwest that led the January 6th insurrection, like the Oath Keepers and Proud Boys.
But that hasn't deterred these groups and the groups that they work with from continuing to organize and mobilize at the local level. And we're seeing that happen in cities across Oregon almost on a weekly basis now, which is really disturbing.
Rallies are planned for the weekend in Oregon, many a continuation of past events protesting COVID-19 health measures. Piggott notes that Salem has been the epicenter of far-right violence since protesters broke into the Oregon Capitol on December 21st. A major concern about these groups is their appeal to veterans. On July 4th, a military-led group is holding what it calls a Coalition to Defend America rally in Florida. Dan Barkoff, a former Navy SEAL, leads Veterans for Responsible Leadership, a super PAC, and We the Veterans, a nonprofit advocacy group for democratic values launching on July 4th. He says they want to counteract the draw of far-right groups to veterans who come home from service.
These extremist organizations are providing something, you know, to these veterans, which is, you know, number one, a sense of belonging. Number two, kind of this camaraderie. So our goal is to redefine patriotism and to compete with these organizations in their own communities.
George Black is a researcher who reports on the connections between the conspiracy theories that fueled the Capitol insurrection in January and the grievances of right-wing military officers after the Vietnam War. He says the events at the Capitol are just one part of a longer-term effort by far-right anti-government groups to gain political power.
It's part and parcel with the movement to suppress voting rights in Republican-led states. It's about replacing local officials who are in a position to certify or decertify future elections. It's very much with an eye on 2022 and taking Congress back.
For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
A fireworks ban is going into effect for Multnomah County ahead of the 4th of July weekend. With more details, here's KBOO's Josh Salem.
Multnomah County just banned the sale and use of all fireworks within unincorporated areas. The ban is in effect now and lasts for 30 days. The emergency declaration publicizing the ban is based on the county's unusually dry conditions. Multnomah County Chair Deborah Cafori says the declaration is in place to reduce the risk of devastating fires. There are penalties for violating the ban, though county sheriff deputies are taking an education-first approach. Any person violating the declaration is subject to a fine of $500. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
The Oregon communities of Blue River and Detroit in the Cascades suffered staggering home losses in the 2020 wildfires. Today, those communities are working around the clock with rebuilding efforts of homes, orchards, and outbuildings. For more on the story, here's KBOO's Jeslyn Lemke.
The communities of Blue River, Vida, and Detroit, Oregon suffered staggering home losses in the 2020 wildfires. Today, these communities are working around the clock with rebuilding efforts of homes, orchards, and outbuildings. Farmer Nathan Mead has worked the same 60-acre filbert orchard along the river outside Vida since 1973. Mead and his family lost all 12 structures on their land in the Holiday Farm fire. This winter, Mead ordered 4,800 young filbert trees from a nearby nursery to replace the 10% of his orchard that was destroyed.
Stop.
This is the sound of contractors dropping pipes from a truck along the rows of new filbert trees growing from the ashy soil.
Worst case was on this west side over here where you see the young ones. They were older trees in there, and they would get embers that catch in the heartwood. Lots of times these will get trunk rot. And they get embers catching them and just burn the centers right out of them. They're planted in the 40s, so they're probably 80 years old. So there's about 4,800 new trees out there, yes. This guy's got about 6 inches of growth on him. Hopefully in 5 years they'll actually get a crop off of them.
General contractor Norm Kuhn was laying down irrigation pipe for the new filbert trees on June 25th. In the Vida area, Kuhn says his company has helped at least 12 homeowners remove the charred debris from their homes to begin rebuilding.
The material supply is short because of the rush of all the work being done, and the hazard trees is a big project to get down and out of the way for the safety of the homes and the highway. Oh, they've been short on lumber, more so labor to get it up here, get the gravel put in place, and a lot of material is short-handed because of the pandemic and the fire, so it's been a challenge to get everything here on time.
Further north, a drive through the tiny mountain town of Detroit, Oregon, reveals block after block of charred house footprints. This is damage from the Beachy fire that roared through the same night as the Holiday Farm fire. The blackened forest for miles either side of Detroit is telling. 264 homes burned here. Destroyed, Detroit is currently a town of RVs, trailers, and porta-potties and construction equipment. Signs that read, "Rebuild Detroit," with a website for donations are posted every few blocks and posted at the town's grocery store. Detroit is undertaking a massive transition. This is Rich Duncan, a contractor whose construction company is rebuilding a community building for Detroit from the old high school. I caught up to Rich by phone as he was on site in Detroit.
So there's some new people in the area buying with those opportunities, and then there's some existing people that are really eager to rebuild their vacation home. And there's a lot of construction going on. Now our hope and dream that I have is that we have a community center that they come back and there's some originality to that, some home to that, that they feel that this is still a place that they would consider, you know, it's still Detroit, Oregon.
Ideally, the communities of Blue River, Vida, and Detroit will see some real rebuilding progress by the end of 2021. This is journalist Jessel Lemke with KBOO Radio.
21-year-old Sha'Carri Richardson was chosen to represent the U.S. at the 2021 Olympics after running the sixth fastest 100-meter sprint in history. Now she may be unable to compete after testing positive for THC. Richardson purchased and consumed a THC edible in Eugene, Oregon, where marijuana is legal. Richardson's biological mother passed away recently, and she told reporters that she used THC to cope with her pain. The Olympic Committee issued a one-month sanction from international regulators. The sanction was reduced from 3 months when Richardson agreed to counseling. Richardson enjoys immense popularity for her outgoing personality, candidness, and exceptional run times. After the ruling yesterday, she tweeted, quote, "I am human," unquote. THC does not provide an unfair advantage to athletes, but the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency prohibits its use in competition. The U.S. Supreme Court has refused to hear an appeal requested by a Washington state florist who denied service to a same-sex couple. With more on the story, here's KBOO's Josh Salem.
The United States Supreme Court refused to hear a case involving a florist who would not arrange flowers for a gay couple's same-sex wedding. The owner of Arlene's Flowers, Baronelle Stutzman, said making the arrangement would violate her religious beliefs. Washington state originally fined Stutzman $1,000 for violating an anti-discrimination law. Arranging flowers for opposite-sex marriages obligated her to do the same for gay couples. The Washington Supreme Court upheld the initial ruling. Stutzman's lawyers argued the state violated her right to religious expression and her free speech rights as well. They based the latter argument on the legal theory that arranging flowers is a form of creative expression, protected in the same way as free speech. In a 6-3 decision, the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear the appeal. The couple who sued the florist had canceled their plans for a dream wedding and held a small ceremony at home instead. They said they hope their victory in the courts sends a hopeful message to the LGBT+ community and that no one should have to experience the hurt that they did. For KBOO News, I'm Josh Salem.
The state of New York is charging the Trump administration and its CFO, Alan Weisselberg, for tax fraud. The Manhattan District Attorney's Office presented evidence alleging a 16-year scheme by Weisselberg to channel more than $1.7 million into his personal funds. Although Donald Trump himself was not indicted, he denounced the trial as a so-called witch hunt and accused prosecutors of political bias. Weisselberg is the latest in a slew of Trump associates to be indicted, raising the possibility of cooperation with New York State prosecutors investigating Trump. Independence Day is around the corner, and many Americans prepare to celebrate the birth of their democracy. However, the fundamental right to vote has come under fire around the nation as states pass stringent voter suppression laws that target young, working-class Black and Latino voters. Yesterday, the conservative-majority U.S. Supreme Court upheld two controversial voter suppression laws passed in Arizona. With more on the story, it's Mary Sherman with 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
The Supreme Court just made it harder to stop laws from going into effect that block access to the ballot for Black and brown voters.
In a 6-3 decision Thursday, justices upheld two Arizona voting laws that ban collection of absentee ballots by anyone other than a family member or caregiver and throw out ballots cast in the wrong precinct. Sylvia Albert with Common Cause says the measures disproportionately impact Native Americans who often live far from polling locations. The majority opinion said just because voting may be inconvenient doesn't mean access is unequal. Albert says that's the wrong interpretation.
The Voting Rights Act was pass in order to stop policies that would harm access to the ballot. It didn't say, as long as somebody can vote in some way, it's okay. It said, these policies have to be stopped.
The U.S. House approved a $715 billion surface transportation and water infrastructure bill Thursday. Texas Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee says it's an historic opportunity.
Rebuilding the nation's roads, bridges, transit, rail, and we'll be fighting against climate change.
The INVEST Act also includes an amendment from Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to address lead pipe infrastructure in schools.
In the richest country in the world, no child should be poisoned by their classroom water fountain.
Meanwhile, Ocasio-Cortez is among those calling on Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy to take action against Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene after a weekend rally where Greene attacked President Biden and other lawmakers.
The Democrats are now controlled by the Jihad Squad, led by AOC, the little communist from New York City.
Greene has been involved in several disputes since taking office and was previously stripped of her committee assignments. McCarthy has not commented on the request, but did weigh in on Republican Liz Cheney's appointment to the new select committee investigating the January 6 attack.
Well, I was shocked that she would accept something from Speaker Pelosi. It would seem to me, since I didn't hear from her, maybe she's closer to her than us.
Cheney's been an outspoken critic of former President Donald Trump. Trump's attorney Ron Fischetti blasted the Manhattan DA for a fraud and conspiracy indictment against the Trump Organization.
We have not had a local prosecutor go after a former president of the United States or his employees or his company. And that is a significant line to cross.
The company's CFO, Alan Weiselberg, pleaded not guilty to 15 charges stemming from an alleged 15-year-long tax fraud scheme. And President Joe Biden visited Miami to meet with the families of the victims of last week's massive condo building collapse. 18 deaths have been confirmed, and 145 people are still missing.
The whole nation is mourning with these families. They see it every day on television. They're going through hell.
Today, Biden welcomes new citizens in a naturalization ceremony ahead of Independence Day. Cole Hemstreet contributed reporting. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, featuring an interview with Vera Eidelman, staff attorney with the ACLU's Speech, Privacy, and Technology Project. Then at 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Tonight's weather will remain in the 70s, cooling down to the low 60s in the early morning. Clear skies and highs in the 80s will continue into Saturday. Today in history, in 1839, kidnapped Africans successfully led a revolt on the slave ship, the Amistad. After a trial in the U.S. Supreme Court, the survivors returned home. The quote of the day is from Argentine Marxist revolutionary Che Guevara, who said, quote, "If you tremble with indignation at every injustice, then you are a comrade of mine." As the results of the U.S. Census are processed, many hope they can be used to create voting districts that are more fair. A voting rights coalition in Ohio is pressuring state lawmakers to make this year's redistricting more representative and transparent. Here's Mary Sherman with more.
A new alliance is calling on Ohio's elected leaders to get to work on this year's redistricting process. The newly launched Equal Districts Coalition held a news conference on Thursday to demand a fair and transparent map-making process. Katie Shanahan with the All on the Line campaign says that means ensuring citizens speak up and get involved.
We should be centering the people in every conversation that we have about what our districts look like now and what they need to look like in the future to best represent our communities.
Prentice Haney with the Ohio Organizing Collaborative explains the coalition is helping residents create their own district maps online, with 1,900 submitted so far.
Regular citizens right now, from Chillicothe to Dayton to Columbus, are actually modeling the process that our mapmakers should be doing right now. They're showing them what the heart of the reform should be.
Those maps will be presented to the Ohio Redistricting Commission, which has not yet convened. Census data will be available in 45 days, that's mid-August, much later than usual because of the pandemic. With the Council on American-Islamic Relations in Ohio, Tala Dabor says the coalition will engage with diverse communities who have traditionally been left out of the map-drawing process.
We know our communities best. We must ensure that minority voices who have been politically disenfranchised receive ample representation and fair districts.
And Daryl Johnson with the Ohio Federation of Teachers sees the 2021 redistricting process as an opportunity to ensure that children know their vote is their voice. He thinks that for too long, some politicians have rigged district maps to their benefit.
As educators, we teach at a very young age that, you know, democracy is important, that we should participate in that process, and that you have the opportunity to choose your electorate. Unfortunately, over the last 10 years, legislators have been choosing who will represent them.
Learn more at equaldistricts.com. Mary Sherman, Ohio News Connection. This story was produced in association with Meeting the Public Interest and funded in part by the George Gunn Foundation.
Today, U.S. troops withdrew from the Bagram Air Base, a critical stronghold near Kabul. For 20 years, Bagram has been at the center of American military strategy, just as it was during the Soviet invasion of the 1980s. The withdrawal from Bagram is a clear sign that the troop withdrawal announced by Biden in April is well underway. Within hours of the Army withdrawing from Bagram, dozens of looters entered the American headquarters. According to the Afghan District Administrator, local officials were not notified ahead of time about the withdrawal. While most Afghanis are eager for an end to over four decades of conflict, the U.S. leaves the country as the Taliban is launching devastating new campaigns in most Afghan provinces. Additionally, ISIS remains a serious threat. Peace talks between the U.S. and the Taliban in 2018 without the Afghan government have stalled and seem unlikely to result in a ceasefire. Security experts predict that the current Afghan government will be unable to survive without a foreign presence. Canada's residential school program has become notorious for its historical mistreatment and abuse of Indigenous youth. Several weeks ago, the remains of 182 children were discovered outside one of these schools in Cranbrook. However, a Canadian priest has received attention and criticism recently for defending the system. With that story and more, here's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Catholic priest in Ontario has resigned over comments he made about the good done in residential schools. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the Archdiocese of Toronto apologized for the remarks.
Owen Keenan was the pastor of the Merciful Redeemer Parish in Mississauga, just west of Toronto. He was criticized in June for a sermon in which he talked about Canada's residential school system. Part of Keenan's sermon was posted online.
Now, I presume that the same number would thank the church for the good that was done in those schools. But of course, that question was never asked. And in fact, we're not allowed even to say that good was done in those schools.
Those comments were widely criticized. Here's Mississauga Mayor Bonnie Crombie.
His comments show a fundamental misunderstanding of one of the core tragedies of the residential school system in Canada. The children were forcibly separated from their parents. For the first time, we are truly confronting our history and learning the truth about what really happened.
In a statement, Keenan apologized and acknowledged the pain and anger which has been magnified by his comments. He also pledged to do better. He also said, as a Catholic and a priest, he does not condone the residential school system, and he regrets deeply that those schools existed. Cardinal Thomas Collins of the Archdiocese of Toronto accepted Keenan's resignation. Keenan is now on an indefinite leave of absence. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
This week, an Indigenous nonprofit in Montana announced participants for an intergenerational program to preserve knowledge between tribal elders and young Indigenous women. Yellowstone Public Radio's Taylor Stagner has more on the effort to preserve Indigenous knowledge.
The Spirit-Aligned Leadership Program will have 21 Indigenous women work on projects in their tribal communities from all over the U.S. and Canada. Gail Small is the Intergenerational Indigenous Women's Fellowship Program Director. She says that the oldest Indigenous women in the program are in their 80s.
One of the women, the elder woman, said,
this will be my last big effort. They're reflecting back on their life, and they're intentionally choosing what knowledge they are going to pass on, and they live that knowledge. So it's not like they're writing a book or doing a video.
Spirit Aligned Leadership Program is one of the only nonprofits in the U.S. that focuses on knowledge sharing for Indigenous women. Small says that Indigenous knowledge is precious, and with COVID-19 taking the lives of many Indigenous elders, Spirit Aligned wanted to work fast to preserve Indigenous ways of being.
We quickly realized the loss of tribal elders. Like in my tribe alone, we lost over 60 elders. And we were seeing impacts just rolling through tribal communities.
The pairings will work on projects that align with the elders' interests and life's work, including mapping stars for ceremony, language revitalization efforts, and Indigenous food sovereignty. For National Native News, I'm Taylor Stagner.
Native organizations say Thursday's U.S. Supreme Court decision, which upheld two Arizona voting policies, make it harder for people of color, especially Native Americans, to vote. It also makes it harder to bring claims under Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which has been used to protect Native voters from laws making it difficult to vote. The Native American Rights Fund and the National Congress of American Indians had filed an amicus brief to address barriers and advocate for Native voters. Tribal leaders in Arizona have opposed a number of measures presented this year in the state they say will limit turnout in elections and disproportionately impact Native voters. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Alaska is known for mild summers and bitter winters. Climate change is disrupting those seasonal shifts, and thunderstorms are becoming more common. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Across much of the country, the rumble of thunder is a familiar sound on a hot, humid afternoon. But in Alaska, thunderstorms are rare. That's because thunderstorms form when warm, moist air near the surface of the Earth rises and collides with colder air.
Those conditions, historically, are hard to come by in Alaska. You see kind of infrequent thunderstorms to maybe no thunderstorms, depending on where you are.
Andrew Newman is a scientist with the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado. He says that as the climate changes, temperatures are rising quickly in the region, and sea ice is melting, giving way to open water, which evaporates more easily.
With that, we expect more moisture to be present in the atmosphere, which gives the conditions for thunderstorm days.
Newman's team estimates that if the emissions of heat-trapping pollution continue to rise, the number of thunderstorms in Alaska could triple by the end of the century. That could pose significant risks in the state, such as flash flooding, landslides, and lightning-sparked wildfires across Alaska's vast wilderness. But Newman says that if people cut global carbon pollution, future thunderstorms and the threats they pose can be minimized. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
The record-breaking heat wave in Western Canada continues, and wildfire season arrives early for British Columbia. The small community of Lytton, 95 miles northeast of Vancouver, was evacuated Wednesday shortly before flames consumed the town. Lytton's mayor, Jan Polderman, told the CBC, quote, "The whole town is on fire. It took a whole 15 minutes from the first sign of smoke to all of a sudden there being fire everywhere," unquote. Highs this Tuesday in Lytton reached 121 degrees, a staggering record for the country. The Northwest heat wave broke global records for days in a row, from Portland to Vancouver, BC. Here in Portland, temperatures rose as high as 116 degrees. Already, more than 60 heat-related deaths have been reported in the state. Climate scientists predict fatal heat waves will become increasingly common as the world grapples with the climate crisis. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, July 2nd, 2021. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. The producer for tonight's newscast is Ethan Sandweiss, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Josh Salem, Charles Blank, Mary Sherman, Jeslyn Lemke, Anthony Lizowitz, Eric Tegadoff, and Antonia Gonzalez. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Yasmin Kobanoglu. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 6, it's Swingin' Country, playing country classics and keeping you tuned into live music around town. Then at 9, it's Music from the True Vine, traditional and contemporary old time and bluegrass. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, for many U.S. citizens, the 4th of July is really just a chance to barbecue with friends and family. But for U.S. news media, it's also a chance to say or imply that there really is something to celebrate about the unique place of the United States in the world. The special democratic project that this country is supposedly engaged in. And that's where the message gets complicated. Because while media give airtime and column inches to where you can find the best holiday sales and celebrations, fewer will use the occasion to direct attention to the danger that the democratic project is facing. The energetic efforts to silence the voices of anyone who has something critical to say about this country, its practices and policies, or its history. Celebrate, don't interrogate, is the takeaway from a press corps that wants